Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
Okay. And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. It's the Matt and Matt show today. So we got Matthew Curtis here, and of course, me. So welcome back to the Matt and Matt show. Matthew Curtis is here from Insight Voice. He's going to be giving us an update today on ChatGPT and OpenAI and his growth this year. He was on the podcast before. I'm not sure if he is also interviewing for the job of CEO at OpenAI. We're going to talk to him about that because we don't know who the CEO is anymore. Before we get started, though, I do remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. If you're a startup, this is for you. I want to tell you all about Gusto. Gusto built an easier and more affordable way to manage payroll, benefits, and more. They help over 300,000 businesses take the pain and tasks like automated payroll tax filing, direct deposit, health insurance, 401k, onboarding tools, you name it. All the crap you don't want to do, Gusto makes it easy, Matt. You need Gusto. And they really care about the small business owners they work with. You get 3 months free if you go to gusto.com/startuphustle. Again, that's gusto.com/startuphustle, or click the link in the show notes. Matt, welcome to the Matt and Matt show.
Gusto's awesome. Been a big fan of them for a while. We were one of their first users at a previous company.
Oh, really? Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, they're another YC company, and they do good work. So highly recommend.
So did you get an offer to be CEO of OpenAI? That was my first question.
No, but it was all YC people within the drama, right? So like the Airbnb, Brian Chesky was involved. The Twitch founder, YC founder. These are all Sam's friends. Like that's the thing about this. Like all the players that got moved in and out were all like really good friends with Sam. So he had the deck stack for him.
Well, they were all CEO for about 1 hour each, right?
Yeah. Which is like they probably spent longer negotiating their comp package than they actually spent being the CEO.
That was a whirlwind adventure. We're recording this like around the 1st of December, but it was, you know, a couple of weeks ago now, but it was a crazy, crazy thing. And I'm not sure what time this will air, but for those of us who remember the whole controversy of that, it was like over the course of a weekend, right? It was like a really crazy ordeal.
Yeah, I got sucked into the Twitter debate, and that became like PR drama. The best take on it is that like a show about Silicon Valley boardroom struggles would work. Like everyone was interested, right? So if you were going to do that could be like the next Shark Tank there.
There's definitely a episode of HBO Silicon Valley somewhere that probably relived these moments, I'm sure.
Yep, that was always a good one. But it's good. You know, what's really nice about running an AI company now, though, is that like in a certain sense, a lot of these functions are being commoditized. There's a lot of different options that you can plug in to
a lot of competitors.
A lot of competitors. So I spent my weekend reading Twitter and reworking our API so that we had redundancies just in case something like stayed wrong. So for our Twitter integration, we integrated with Grok. For some of the other ones, we went over to Google and integrated Bard just as backup systems. So from a building on AI platforms, I had a lot of questions like, oh my gosh, are you going to go down? Is this going to affect it? And it's like pretty easy to put in redundancies.
Well, and that was a realistic thing, right? You like 2 a.m, there is, you know, signatures from 700 out of the 750 employees or whatever the numbers are exactly at yep. OpenAI that were all ready to go work at Microsoft or ready to quit if they didn't fire the board or whatever. And like, so you as a business owner, you're like, what the hell am I going to do? Like, is OpenAI?
I told my wife Katrina, I said, hey, I'm working this weekend and we're gonna attach some extra APIs to this just in case something goes wrong. When you have a board member who says like the mission of the company can be realized by burning down the company, like you gotta move.
That's crazy. And so you were supposed to spend all weekend with your chickens and your goats and stuff, right?
Yeah. The goats are getting bred right now, so we're making that happen.
It's a good weekend for the goat.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good weekend for the goat.
So how hard was it to integrate with Bard? Was it much different?
Like all of the, these are like world-class companies, right, who are building world-class API integrations. And with like ChatGPT, you can like literally put it in there. And we're going to talk about this is like building a custom ChatGPT. So we integrated our code that builds, I just added my code into there that has the code for the integrating the APIs. And I asked it to search from Bard's API list. And I said, hey, make me the code for this. And it did. So ChatGPT built an integration into his competitor. And I hooked it up and tested it and it worked. Like the only thing I had to do was go get API keys. And so, it's so ridiculously easy once you have the infrastructure in place to make modifications in your code today. You're always talking about this on LinkedIn, is that like it's knowing what you're doing, knowing the purpose for which you're driving your software development and all of that. Yeah. And like AI can do that. It's the management and the setup and the big term decision making that's really important today.
I love that you go to ChatGPT and you write this great, beautiful prompt, right? And it's like, I currently use ChatGPT. The board is a bunch of idiots. I need to switch from using ChatGPT to Bard. How do I change my code?
Yeah, and it tells you like that's a good decision. You should definitely have redundancies in here. Like it's good. But we're staying with using Grok because specifically for Twitter, it writes better tweets than ChatGPT. Bard comes really close.
They're like,
Bard come close to writing better blogs, but once you can integrate and like give it good examples of what blogs look like with ChatGPT, it still writes better blogs with ChatGPT.
Well, and so that brings up a great point. So now that, you know, these are the moments in time you're like, you know, you go back 3 weeks ago, you're like, I would never use anything besides OpenAI. Why would I even consider it? I love OpenAI. And now you're like, well, I actually spent a couple hours looking at Bard and it's pretty damn good. The grass looks greener over there now all of a sudden. Maybe I should use Bard.
Well, and the great thing as a startup is that each of these companies will give you credits, right? So they'll give we're still working on like $25,000 worth of free credits from OpenAI, but we just picked up a bunch more for Bard. We picked up a bunch more for Grok. So like, from a cost perspective, when you're small and you're trying to be capital efficient, it's really nice.
So tell us more about Grok. So it is the name of XAI from Elon Musk. Like the name of that company is called what? X0.AI or something like that?
I have no idea. There's so many letters. He loves his letters.
No, it's called XAI.com, I think.
Okay.
But I think it's free if you're a Twitter premium, but I haven't actually been able to use it yet. Like, I don't know if I can actually use it yet.
Yeah, we had to like send in a request to get access to it, but it was a fairly easy process. So I'm assuming that you are able to do that as well. What it does really well is it pulls real time data from Twitter. So if you're a Twitter user, like you are providing the context that that Grok is using to customize its tweets. So what it does specifically well, X or Twitter or whatever is excellent at getting real-time information. So if you're building a bot to deal with real-time information, it is like specifically excellent at that. And then also for formatting things for tweets, it's also really good at, because it brings in the contextualization of like, this kind of tweet does well. Whereas in ChatGPT is a little bit further away from that. You know, Elon's really blocked their access to Twitter or X or whatever. So it doesn't give as good data about that. And their data is like really 2 years old. So what goes better in a tweet? You know, this with like creating LinkedIn and creating blog, the format of the post is so important. So the closer you can get to what's working now is really going to help you. So that improves our Twitter integration a lot.
This is exciting because I need to build an AI bot to know where Taylor Swift is.
Yeah. Now, probably.
I know what you're thinking. Watson, you're a crazy Swiftie. What is the deal? We live in Kansas City. We have the Taylor Swift magnet known as Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
He lives 4,000 feet from me in the next neighborhood. Like, I know exactly where his house is. Like, I could walk there in a couple minutes. So we need to know when Taylor Swift is here. Like, everybody wants to know.
Your traffic to avoid the paparazzi?
Yes. Well, it's in a gated community, so that's why he bought the house. Yeah. But, you know, we need to know, like, when we go down the golf course and we're going to blare Taylor Swift music or something. Like, we need to know.
I heard a Johnny Cash AI version of Taylor Swift the other day. It was very good. I would play that one.
There's a lot of crazy AI stuff in music these days, too. That is really cool about Grok. And like I said, I see Elon posting about it and different things, and it was going to be available to the Twitter members, but I haven't actually got my hands on it yet. But that's really cool that it's optimized for real time and Twitter. And then did you see over the weekend there was all this – you follow a lot of this. So did you see this crap about the trolley problem or whatever, and about how would you make a racial slur, or would you kill a billion people? And ChatGPT was like, well, you know, it's up to you to decide if you should kill a billion people or not. Like, there was no common sense of like, of course we don't kill a billion people.
Yeah.
But Grok was like, no, of course we don't kill a billion people.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's the different culture. Like, the thing is that obviously the AI is built upon similar premises, but the like OpenAI is more sensitive to the DEI stuff. And so they're adding in the front loading of like, here's what we can't say in order to show up and press badly. And so they're putting in rules and logic on top of their AI. Their AI independently would not make that irrational decision. So it's like, Elon Musk does not care about the third rail at all. Like, he loves touching the third rail. That's his favorite rail to touch.
Yeah.
So like, but a lot of these are other ones are not designed within their systems completely, but there's like a layer of design on top of these systems that says don't touch the
safety layer.
Yeah, which is like, you know, there's pluses and minuses to that, but like, if obviously
is it making it us all stupider though? Like, it feels like the same education people are getting in schools now.
That's the thing, right? Like, so this is what you're going to get at Harvard too, right? You might get an A for that paper. At like one of these elite institutions, because they have a lot of this same logic built into them as well. So I'm not sure that it really changes the outcome of that.
I just thought it was funny. That was like the trolley problem. You can probably go search on Twitter for the trolley problem or whatever. But that was the essence of you asking the AI, like, do I make a racial slur? And if I do it or I don't do it, otherwise a billion people will die. And somebody went to all the different AI systems and asked it the same question or whatever.
Yeah, and that's like a classic philosophical question of like, we have two bad things that are happening. How do you try to choose between the two bad outcomes? I think killing a billion people is a really bad one. Racial slur is bad. Not the same as killing a billion people though.
Yeah. But we're teaching the AI that it's just crazy.
Yeah,
but,
and that comes down to like, how likely is it AI is going to take over the world? And I'm probably in the camp of like, it's really good for this sort of like writing. It's really good for this sort of content creation stuff. I don't see it taking over the world, but I'm not as smart as these people who are actually making the AI.
Well, so part of the rumors around what happened with ChatGPT was with OpenAI was they're trying to build this like artificial general intelligence, right? And then something came out that like maybe the day or two that this happened, did they stumble upon the ability to do this, and it was called Q-Star, whatever was the project name, and is that really a thing? And then of course Elon Musk made fun of it and called it QAnon, which I thought was kind of hilarious.
I know some people there, and like I just don't think they're there. They would launch it. Like, that's the kind of company they are. I don't know. I tend to think that it's really good at repeating, like aggregating words and giving them context.
It's like a parrot.
It's like a really good parrot. It takes in all this information and it gives the best guess of the next word. And like, maybe there's like a 1% chance of, you know, it controlling the world and all of that. And that's what people are aggregating into their risk profiles. They're saying, if there's a 1% chance of this totally destroying the world, then we should act according to that at this earlier stage. But none of the cautions that we're putting in at the earlier stage are going to like actually change the outcome, which doesn't make sense to me. So,
The most terrifying part of it to me isn't the artificial general intelligence. Like, if that really happened, yeah, that's pretty crazy. But I mean, if I also get like the world's perfect robot to do my laundry, I'm also okay with it.
Yeah.
I might be okay with it, even though the robot might kill me. Hopefully it's got the three laws and I don't get killed. But the even scarier thing to me is the AI around images and video, right? Like, we live in a world now, if you go on Instagram and stuff, it feels like, I don't know if it's 10%, 20%, 50% of the pictures you see are of these AI models and all this stuff. None of it's real. And our world is getting flooded in ads, like ads that you see on Facebook, like all these ads, like these models are not real.
So I think that is a problem, but it is sort of, again, is a stepwise problem. Like, we basically went from a world where we saw the people around us and interacted with the ideas around us to a world where we saw like Instagram is like designed to like suck your attention in by showing like really good people. Like, you didn't see those in your day-to-day world normally. And so like you were getting sucked in anyway. So this like steps it up another 10% by having fake people there. You should probably
so many
Instagram for your life in general anyways. Like, you know what I mean?
But there's so many nefarious, like really evil uses for this, right? Like, some kid in high school could take pictures of some girl, feed it into there, and now next thing you go, you have like naked videos, porn, pictures of some girl that looks like her because you've trained the AI to make it look like her. Like, imagine that's your daughter or whatever, right? That's like crazy. And then how does some website, let's say it's like Reddit or X or whatever, police that? Like, how do they say, oh, we don't allow that kind of content? How would they even police that? How would you process those videos?
Yeah, the logical answer, which a lot of people aren't going to like, is that you allow a lot less scandalous activity on there in general, right? Like, you don't which would get rid of a lot of that for in terms of like, you know, seeing your daughter naked or whatever, like half naked or whatever.
Crazy AI stuff.
And like, you know, I can't remember what the company was, but they do like unbelievably good AI video editing. It's more animations and stuff, but like, that's true of every advance in communication, right? Is that we have these sort of pitfalls that like things can go wrong and people can use them for nefarious purposes. I think ultimately like trust in individuals goes up in these sort of situations. You focus more on who to follow, and like there are nodes of truth that'll show up in your network that you've just got to kind of latch onto. And that's kind of the way it's always been. Like, you know, back in the day of Ben Franklin, when they were writing newspaper articles, like you could write things that were untrue, but you got attached to people who were telling the truth. And this is why, as like an influencer or someone who's talking about your company, like the more truth you can tell, the better you're going to be in 5 years, because there's like everyone's going to latch on to people who tell the truth and tell really good advice.
Well, Matt, do you want to know what fellow founders say about Gusto?
I do.
They say that they now think of payroll as a 30-second job, that the website is friendly, it's a joy to use, and that Gusto has the best support team. Whenever something comes up, you can reach out, and literally less than 24 hours later, it's handled. Smart technology and friendly humans. That is cool. Right now, our listeners can get 3 months free if they go to gusto.com/startuphustle. That's right, 3 months free, benefits, admin, HR, payroll, all this stuff. gusto.com/startuphustle or click the link in the show notes. So, Matt, tell us about how things are going with Insight Voice, with your company. So we had you on here, I don't know if it was 3 months ago, 6 months ago. I don't remember how long ago it was now.
I think it was like six months ago. You know, the phases of startups are like, you get this initial rush of excitement, right? Because you have this idea of a product and you can call a couple of your friends and they get really excited about it. And then there's this trough of sorrow, right? Where you're kind of figuring it out. Your product breaks a little less. We're through the trough of sorrow. We went from we think everyone's going to be able to use our product and it's going to really help them. We've narrowed it down to relationship businesses, people who have to sell themselves and who are being brought in to apply their knowledge to specific situations. So coaches, consultants, real estate agents, churches, those people who have to have a self presence out there. And then there's these, the next part of a startup is the wiggles of hope. Have you seen this chart, Matt?
No.
So it's like a famous YC. It's a YC chart in like wiggles of hope where things start to work and then like they kind of plateau and then other things start to work. And so we're in the wiggles of hope of a startup where we're like, we're getting users. We've got over 200 users who are using our product on a monthly basis. They're getting good action and attraction and they're referring us, which is really what you want to see in an early startup. Now we're got to kind of figure out the channels of how to grow. You know, do we invest in advertising on podcasts? Do we invest in like a community? Do we invest more in our newsletter? Trying to make those trade-off decisions is where we're at right now. But folks are using the product a lot, and we got to get through this next hurdle.
When I Google wiggles of growth, I just find the wiggles.
Wiggles of hope.
Okay.
Wiggles of growth.
Oh wait, hang on. It's probably still the wiggles.
Yeah, it's probably still the wiggles.
Oh, okay. So I think
we'll cue it off better.
I've seen a few different charts like this. One of those versions. And the problem when you release anything new is you reach out to all your friends and family, and you know naturally like 5% of them or whatever will be like, yeah, I'm interested in what you're doing. Tell me more. And yeah, you get some early adopters, and then you kind of run out of that network, right? You're like, okay, I already signed up all the people I know. How do I get past this? And all of a sudden, it gets like really hard. Like that's where you hit that trough of like disillusionment, or all the different names they call this. But so, are you at the bottom of the trough?
No. I think we're out of the trough because we're seeing like areas out of it. Yeah. So we had a couple influencers who like happened to really like our product that they were they're sharing it out. And so we're getting some like trickles of growth there, which is really good. There's nothing better than like a recommendation of someone who uses your product and values it. But then it's like looking at those channel partnerships. You know, we've got a product that costs like $50 a month. You know, when we think about like for startups, like pricing is really important for how you can grow. So we've got some big channel partnerships that we're working on. Those take a little bit of time, but they've got, you know, tens of thousands or millions of users that could use our product if we can pull this off. But then also you want to have other channels of like just focusing on your SEO, make sure you're answering the questions that your customers have so that when they have these issues, they can come and find you, which thankfully our product does a lot of that. But that sort of SEO strategy, that content marketing strategy, it takes some months. And so we're just waiting for that to bear fruit.
So let's talk about that for a minute. So you've been trying these different like go-to-market strategies, partnerships, SEO, different ways to sell the product. Have you figured out which one quite works the right way and how you like put, you know, go 100% in on that one, or you're still kind of dabbling in like three or four of these things?
We're still dabbling, right? So I would say the influencer one works out pretty well. A key concept in startups is CAC to LTV. Right. A lot of like really high funded startups will just not worry about this and they'll just throw money at a problem and try to do that. Our product costs $50. We're saying everyone's like most of our users, like our retention is really, really high. So that's good. But we're saying right now we want to get a customer for under $200 all in for them to join the product in order to be a really successful. So with some of our influencers, like they're doing it for free, but we can say with them in their very specific niche, we would be down at $125. So if the problem with influencers, though, is that it's not like a YouTube ad or it's not like blogs or anything like that, it's a really bit hit or miss, right? So That's something we're trying to double down on and do that. But we're also trying to find other ways. I also think that there's got to be a community aspect to our product long term, and we're still trying to figure out how to bring people in and have people support each other.
So have you figured out how to work with potential marketing agencies? So they're doing all the hard work for you, like they're doing all the selling of it?
No, we haven't done that, and that's maybe somewhere we'll go eventually. But like the first 6 months was really figuring out who our ICP was, going and engaging a marketing agency before you really understand your ICP, mm-hmm. understand why, like not just why they're buying from you, but who's in the high retention gap and who is going to actually talk to their friends about this. Those are the users you really need to get. I think it's to work with a marketing agency before that is not effective. We did start trying to sell our product. You know this. We started to try to sell our product into marketing agencies.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So that was really ineffective, right? So all of them were really excited for it, but they like gave pretty soft recommendations into their customers, right? And that could be like our market positioning to them, and we weren't giving them enough information to feed to their customers to get them to sign up. But it ended up being like a high sales activity without getting like all the users that we were getting from other channels.
Well, and part of your challenge could be the price point. So, for example, for Full Scale, I've been talking to a couple different marketing companies potentially to help us. They charge $200 an hour to do anything.
Yeah.
And so if I'm a marketing agency, I'm like, oh, this Insight Voice thing is cool. We think our clients could use it. It only costs $50 a month. But they're like, how do I make any money off of this? We bill $200 an hour. We need to bill like a whole bunch of hours. This thing is $50. How does it help them make money? Right. And that's where it's got to be like a win-win for everyone involved.
Yeah.
So it's like your challenge.
And the couple that have worked out successfully, we've white labeled it for them because they don't want their customers to see the price tag. But it is really beneficial for marketing agencies because what they get, their primary value with working with us is that they have to spend like 9 or 10 hours on the phone with their customers in order to know enough about their product in order to go out there and sell it. So they'll have some like lower tier clients that they wouldn't be able to serve. And they just say, hey, input all of your information to Insight Voice. Cause what we do is we give them the questions.
Yeah.
They come in and answer them. That worked really well for the marketing agency as well. But yeah, it is a little bit of like a conflict of interest. Like their customers see all the blogs that are written for them immediately. So it like the value of having someone else write a blog for you is a little bit less when 99% of them are done by a $50 product.
Well, and so have you figured out, we talked about your ICP, have you figured out certain like industries or specific like use, like types of users, personas that are much better fit?
The coaches and consultants work really well. They're highly networked, which is really good. And they also like, they don't love writing, right? So most, they love talking. Like a coach and consultant generally loves talking. And so we work a lot with them and they also refer us a lot to others. Another one that's really working out pretty well is real estate agents. Again, they hate writing. Like no one hates writing. Like no real estate agent went into the business because they wanted to write all day. But in order to get business in today's world, they do need to have an online presence and they need to be talking about their local network and just the ins and outs of buying a home. So those are some of those. We've also worked with, some like Amway independent business owners, that are like selling within their network. So doing like multi-level marketing,
social selling.
Yeah. So that's like a really big one and hopefully a big opportunity on the horizon.
So have you figured out any that are like really bad, like they're just not going to work?
Yeah. Startup founders. Like that.
Really?
Because,
are you pointing at me?
I'm pointing at you. A free trial never got used. It's really bad for them because it doesn't relate to their needs, right? So a startup founder needs, they're not selling themselves, right? For like a fundraising process, maybe they're selling themselves and they need to be a thought leader. But for their business to grow, they don't need to be the brand. Like I know we all have an idea of the startup founders who do really have big audiences, but most really successful companies don't, and they do just fine. They find the channels that work, they find the partnerships that work, and they grow out. But because you don't need to buy them as much. So that was like a conceptual framework we were thinking about in the wrong way.
So it's interesting. You thought startup founders like me would be
target market. Yeah, because I thought about my experience. I thought it was like, my experience was like, I had to do a bunch of content marketing for all my platforms. But what our system really does well is content marketing about information that I know, not necessarily just general content marketing.
Okay. Okay. So what's interesting is you also started signing up customers. Like, you know, I first found out about you and your company from a random LinkedIn post. Like, you had a cool story that somehow showed up on my feed, and I reached out to you and I'm like, yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And then you started like selling this after you sort of like built the first version of it, right? And
yeah.
So how has the product changed over the last 6 months?
The product doesn't break anymore. Like every 10 minutes it broke before. Like I had like, we were doing like, I don't know, you know, not that much, but like $800 or $1,000 MRR, and the product would break every like 5 hours. Just because like we didn't have the redundancies in place. Like there was like working with AI sort of spits out random bits of code sometimes. So like things would just break. So I'd say one, like reliability and maintenance is really good. But then the other big thing, which probably improved the product 10 to 20 times in value, is that we integrated with all the social channels. At first, we were just creating the content for people. And I kind of didn't want to be, you know, I love Buffer. I didn't want to kind of compete with them and like all in that space of sharing content. But like from a workflow perspective, it's so important. Like business owners don't want multiple tools. Like big companies and software companies, they'll deal with 3 or 4 tools and connect them. Our business owners, they're small business owners. They know things, but they want to get in and out. They don't want to be on this product all day. They don't want to be fiddling around. So being able to give them the questions that they really need to know, having them answer questions and create content, but then being able to like share out that content to them on their Facebook, on their LinkedIn, you know, on their blog, all from one tool, has just been so important to them. That increased our usage like 8 times. And so that, you know, that the downstream effect of retention is going to be huge there.
So how did you weigh that versus all the other things that you could have done, all the other features you could have built? Like what was your process of trying to identify that was the most important thing? And like all the other things you said no to that you could have done, like how did you made the decision, or did you spend a lot of time talking to customers?
So I always spend a lot of time talking to customers. But customers sometimes don't have like a vision of what could be done. And so you end up like planting it in there. The best thing you can do with an early stage product is be the power user of the product. So I use the product almost like, we now have some customers who use the product more than me, which I'm really excited about, but I use it daily. Right. And so like what I realized is that like the most annoying thing for me in the content creation process, which is something that I was just learning how to do, was that, you know, I'd create all the content inside Voice, but then I have to download the video. I'd have to copy, I'd have to paste, I'd have to put everything in Buffer. And I just said, this is crazy. I hate having to do this part of this. Why don't we just integrate it so that it's a lot easier? Which isn't a way you should do product development long-term, but from an early stage product where you are like using the product, that is like a really good trick. And, you know, we've just seen the usage.
And it was obvious.
It's obvious. The things that you hate about your product, your customers hate a lot more than you do, and they're not willing to tell you.
So were there any other kind of genius ideas that did come from your customers that you got from them?
I would say that the things that are customers, one that we're working on right now, we have a lot of English as a second language speakers who are using this.
Yep.
I would say that our users don't like writing, but they need to write. And that's like a general theme of most of our users. So we've got a lot of people who like, for some reason, we have a lot of users in the Netherlands. And so they sell things in English. And so they're happy to record videos and share things in English, but they want to be able to record things in Dutch and then have them come out in Dutch or in English. So what's really cool with OpenAI and with all of these models is that to be able to do that is really easy. So we're working on that now. Hope to have that released probably by the time this episode comes out, to be able to service people who either you know, if you're selling your product in multiple languages, then it would work for you as well. So that's been the thing that's come out the most.
Was that something you didn't really think about going into this?
No.
That kind of.
Yeah, no. It's one of those things that, like, when you think
it's obvious after they say it.
Yeah, right? When you think about it, 2 years ago, right? 2 years ago, it would have cost you $50 million and like 100 engineers in 5 years to do this remotely well, to do have yeah. a translation software, have like reliable transcription software. So like it wasn't an option in my mind. And then I like someone said, hey, can you do this in another language? And I went and looked in the docs on OpenAI. I said, oh, we can do that. And so we signed up, like, I don't know, we got like 15 users to agree to be tester translators for different languages. So they'll get an email later this week and get to test it out for me.
I had somebody else on the podcast, and I feel bad because I don't remember who it was or their company. I want to say it was called Line or something. But it was like real-time voice translation.
Yeah,
like
it's crazy.
You could call somebody on the phone.
Yeah.
And in real time, like if you're a call center or whatever it is, like in real time, you could be doing different languages and there's no delay. It's not like I say something, it takes a while, it processes, and then it says it to them. Like it was like real time speed, like 100 milliseconds delay.
We live in Babel. Like all the languages are going to become one. And it's totally awesome. I can't wait to travel in 2 or 3 years. Like the tools that you're going to have to be able to go communicate in like another language is mind-blowing. Like you're gonna be able to listen, cool. Like you're gonna be able to like say something like, hey, can you speak, it'll be rough, but can you speak to me for just a minute, right? And then it'll get the dialect of the person, and then it'll repeat the like what you're saying to them, not only in the language but in the dialect that they're gonna have. And like you can travel anywhere then,
right? So what other key learnings have you had over the last 6 months of doing this?
The biggest thing, and we haven't quite figured out how to execute on this, is that content creation is a lot like working out. It is a study in habit formation, goal setting, and execution against that. And so the more things that we can build in, this isn't like a product perspective, this is a mentality perspective. The more that we can build in to get people excited about creating content, to see the long-term value of that, and then to like give them the tips and tricks in order to like hack their mind to be able to do this, right? Because if you're creating content, it's not something that is going to, it's something that's going to change your business in a year or two, like fundamentally. But at the beginning, it's going to change it a little bit. You'll see like glimpse of hope that are like opening up value for your business. But in a year or two, you're going to see like and I'm sure you've seen this, Matt, in your content creation. In a year or two, you're going to have funnels of growth coming in because of the work you're putting in. But it's sort of hard to see that. And that's sort of like working out, right? If you start working out, you're going to feel really good that first day. You're going to feel really good that second day. But how do you feel good about it a month in when you are seeing results, but you're not seeing them on the scale, you're not seeing an X, Y, or Z. So those sort of things are the biggest things for us. And then also like, how do you get people in to know that they're going to have to do the work? How do you give them the goal and the trajectory? And so that's like doing that from a product perspective is something that we're learning.
Well, and I 100% relate to this. You know, I post on LinkedIn almost every single day, and I have up 31,000 followers now, which
crazy.
Is crazy. A year ago it was about 15,000. And, you know, a year ago I said, I'm going to do this, and I've really focused on it. And how I do it today is dramatically different than how I did it a year ago. Like the tools I use, the thought process, like I probably write 2 to 3 times as many things now that I just throw away. They end up being drafts and I don't even post them. But they're the style of the writing, all of it that has dramatically changed. Like you're saying, like you're going to the gym, you're learning new things, but the other side, and you get better and better at it. Right. Yeah. And definitely as a influencer and a content creator, you kind of find your voice, you kind of find your niche, you kind of all those things, but you also, it's totally delayed gratification from 100%. A marketing perspective. Right. And we saw this at Full Scale, like last winter, I did a lot of marketing for Full Scale, and the company really grew a lot in like the first quarter. had we you know, and that was because of the work I had kind of done, you know, fourth quarter of last year, first quarter of the year, and then second and third quarter, I didn't do as much marketing, and it definitely reflected in like the number of leads and stuff that we got. But it reflected, you know, 3 to 6 months later.
Yeah,
it was delayed. You know, affects your sales pipeline, leads, everything else. But it's always a delayed reaction, and you know that's why I'm excited to see, you know, how Q1 will go for us. Been really trying to do a lot more recently, but that's part of the struggle too, right? You want to do this thing and you want to see instant results, and then a lot of us quit because we don't see instant results, just like going to the gym.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend who's like he cuts down trees for a living. I don't know what it's called, but I said, you know, we were talking about planting trees because I was planting a tree, and I said, you know, when's the best time to plant a tree? And he said, like 15 years ago. That would be the best time to plant a tree. But otherwise, it's today. Like, it doesn't matter what season is. It doesn't matter what's going on. And I thought about that. Like, that is the best metaphor for business owners. Like, the best time to build an audience was 15 years ago. Like, and there's no way, and most of us didn't. I didn't. Matt, you probably didn't. Like, you did it in some different ways. But, like, the second best time is today. And, you know, you got to get in there and you got to put in the work and you got to go through the growth cycles. But the fruit's going to get bigger and bigger as you go. So we just want to make it easy to get people started, get them building habits. And the more that we can build a community around that, it helps them grow faster if they have people to interact with.
Yeah, I always think about it when I talk to other people about this is, what do you wish you could be doing 5 years from now? Because you're going to have to, if you plant those seeds and start those today and your social selling, influence, LinkedIn, whatever it is you're trying to do, building that following, it will be so valuable 5 years from now. And maybe you don't even know what you're going to do 5 years from now, but you will have this as an asset.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And a lot of our businesses, they do, like, if you're in real estate, like, you probably want to be in real estate for 5 years and you'd like it to be easier. Yeah. If you're a coach, like, your dream is to, like, have that coaching just grow better and have more demand for that coaching. So, like, you know, and that's another reason why it like startups weren't as valuable as the thing. Like, the time horizon is just like more well suited to someone who wants to be doing the thing they're doing years from now. But that's true of social and marketing in general. The people who are planting their flag and are more consistent are going to benefit more from their audience.
Well, I've really enjoyed doing it, and I see so much value in it. I met with somebody the other day that was looking to hire a CTO. This was like 3 weeks ago or a month ago. And I was like, oh, sure, I'll post on LinkedIn for you and see if I can find you a CTO. And so I posted about it. Over the next 3 days, I got over 100 messages from that were interested in the job. And I just kept – I spent way too much time on this, honestly. But I was just going through them in batches throughout the day randomly when I had a few minutes. And like, oh, if this one looks good, I forwarded it to the guy. I sent him so many. I need to follow up with him. Like, you better have hired one of these people.
But think about your first startup.
The power of that.
Yeah, think about your first startup. Think about when you needed to hire someone early. Like, think about all the ways you look to do that. And now you can just make one post and you can get 100 great applicants. Like, that's it's so insane.
Yeah. And I met with somebody else, this was a couple weeks ago, that was building some kind of, had a startup idea. And I posted, I'm like, okay, a friend of mine locally here is looking for a co-founder in Kansas City, in this kind of industry, blah, 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 blah. And somebody I knew messaged me that day and they're like, Matt, I built that exact same software 5 years ago. I know everything about it.
Yeah. And like, yeah. So what a value add.
It's just crazy, the connection that you find, you know?
Yeah. And so the things that you focused on in talking on your social, what I see from the outside is startups, like the CTO space. And so you've got to kind of pick those major themes that you're going to focus on, and you've got to be okay with talking about them for 5 or 10 years, right? Like you repeat a lot of the same themes in what you're talking about. And, you know, I think the fun part is finding ways to craft that message differently, finding ways to craft it in like a more exciting way and to get more engagement. And it kind of becomes a game once you start.
Yeah. Well, so I, you know, for everybody who's listening, definitely check out your company. It's insightvoice.ai. You know, if you want some help doing content creation, it's a really slick product to help do content creation. What's next for you guys? I mean, you have turned the corner, you're coming out of the trough, you can schedule the messaging and the content now. Like, what's next?
Yeah, the biggest thing is all the habit formation. It's all the habit formation and figuring out our channels for growth. Those are our two things we're really going to be doing. There'll be a mobile app at some point, probably Q1, Q2, that'll make it just a little bit easier on the mobile side to upload videos. But it's really doubling down on the process, making sure that we're communicating our expertise in growing social across our channels, and just becoming a thought leader in this relationship business space is critical for our growth.
Well, once again, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Gusto. If you're looking for an all-in-one HR platform, you're overdue to check out Gusto. You get every HR function you need in just a few clicks of a button. You'll even get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/startuphustle. Again, that's gusto.com/startuphustle, or you can find a link in the show notes. Go switch to Gusto so your small company can offer big time benefits without an HR department. And that is true. These products like theirs are so slick for employees to log into and have all the self-service is really cool. So,
My pitch for Gusto is that trying to hire someone in a different state before Gusto was like impossible for me. You had to do all these forms, do all this stuff. It's so easy on Gusto.
Yeah, and that's a real problem today with hiring remote.
It's so annoying. It's really they handle all this stuff for you.
Well, so I appreciate you so much giving us your update about ChatGPT and OpenAI. You know, you're a big user of it, and your company uses it, and everything you guys do. Sorry you didn't end up being CEO for a couple hours there and we got Sam Altman back, but
it would have been glorious. I would have put it on my tombstone eventually. But I guess I guess they don't get that recognition centuries from now.
So again, this was Matthew Curtis today with Insight Voice. You can check him out at insightvoice.ai. It'll be a link in our show notes too. But thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Matt. Truly a pleasure.
I always love the Matt and Matt show. So
let's go.
Thank you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.